listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted the fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. So wanting my cake and eat it too. And wanting it both ways. Fame made me a balloon, cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. And it was confusing, cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee of loose leaf, abuse ink. Use it as a tool when I blew steam. Hit the lottery, ooh wee. Forget what I gave up to get. It was bittersweet, it's like winning a used me.
Good Wednesday morning. And congratulations to the New York Yankees last night. Going down 3-0 in the top of the first. Their starting pitcher goes a third of an inning. That's right. Then they come back. I love playoff baseball. And to me, there's nothing like it. Every pitch, if you're a baseball fan, if you know about baseball, if you just watch it, you know, to watch the ball get hit and somebody to chase it. I'm sure it's boring. But if you know baseball, playoff baseball's the best. Frame by frame drama. It's awesome. And last night in, you know, I don't know, always to me something special about Yankee Stadium. Growing up in baseball, there always was, but that place was loud and crazy. And baseball playoffs have started mercifully. And which leads me into my first point. I have more and more people telling me, like, I can't do this all the time. I can't watch the news. And I used to have a Twitter account. I used to look at my Facebook feed. Now I've like pruned back my friends to just my family and very close friends. No acquaintances on there. And so I don't want to see what they post, you know, blah, 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 blah. I don't want to see all that. You know, I just want to live my life. And I just get bombarded all the time, every day in my life, with these things that offend people and these things that people think are crazy. And I have to cut back on all that. So I find that interesting. You hear that from more and more people that I just can't do it. I can't take it. I was talking to a friend of mine who's a middle school counselor in North Dakota yesterday, and he said, no, he said, think of kids find themselves overwhelmed. All they see is they see bad news, and they're all over social media. So they see it, and they talk about it, and he said it's interesting because, you know, for the first time in my career, you're encountering kids who say they're, you know, overwhelmed, you know, that life's terrible and whatnot. So... And then the events of what, the last, you know, the you know, think about just this, the daily fare of the news, okay? Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, right? And then you have the Iranian thing going on. Then you have whatever terrorism is migrating around Europe on any given day. Then you have whatever, you know, is going on here. You have the violent debate. Shouldn't be violent, but it, for whatever reason, it turns violent. Well, I know what reason, but that is comprised of what the Confederate Monument thing that has become a battleground between Antifa and white supremacists. So you have that going on. You have the NFL thing going on. I mean, so it's just this constant turmoil. And then layered over the top of that, you have things like North Korea and then Las Vegas, storms in Houston, Florida, and Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. And I'm sure I'm leaving a ton of shit out. So I do find it interesting that, you know, more and more people are saying, I can't do this. I can't. On a daily basis, live my life and have just all this garbage rolling around in my head all the time. So I'm going to do something different. I'm going to deal with it differently. There was a beauty in the morning newspaper. back in the day, there was a beauty to it. And the beauty was, you know, somebody parsed the news and looked at what they thought was newsworthy. Now, you get it all, man. You get it, whether you want it or not, you get it all. So, again, my point is, it's just interesting the number of people that you know, that I know that are coming to that conclusion. That I can't do this anymore. That it affects me. It affects my biorhythms. It affects my mood ring. It affects me. So interesting. In about 7 minutes, we're going to talk to the Gunner. It's Wednesday, so he's not going to be around. Actually, he's got a speaking engagement, so we'll ask him about that real quick. But he's going to explain to us what a bump stock is. So I started hearing this bump stock. And what I heard was a weapon on fully, it was fully automatic. I didn't hear a weapon that had some kind of modification that would allow it to shoot really fast semi-automatic. That's not what I heard. So Mike's going to come on real quick and explain that to us and then tell us where he's going to go speak again. So we'll do that. John Ubaldi's going to join the program this morning. We'll finish up the testimony. If you did not listen to the testimony yesterday from the Senate Armed Service Committee, put that on your list of things to do because there's a ton of great information. Most importantly, both General Mattis and Secretary Mattis and General Dunford believe that we are on the path towards creating a solution in Afghanistan. Yeah, how about that? And, you know, so that's the most encouraging thing, and that, you know, that didn't make a lot of news. What made news was, Mattis was asked yes or no, do you believe that we should remain in the Iran nuclear deal? He said yes, so does that make national news? He and Dunford both got wire brushed by John McCain. That made national news. So we'll go over the news here in a little bit. And then I'll play the tail end of the Senate Armed Service Committee hearing from yesterday. So we had to stop it because the Gunner came off. And as everybody knows, we stopped the world for that guy. So good morning to you. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio here on the All Warrior Radio Network. The president headed for Las Vegas today. And so we'll keep our eye on that, and if anything significant comes out of it, we'll certainly pop that on real quick, and stay abreast of the news. But the news that comes out of there continues to suck. How do you do that? How do you do that? And sick people. I guess people with mental health issues, I don't know what else to say, but to go to the lengths that he did, when you look at, you know, the cameras that he put up, and that's, you know, we only have little glimpses into it, but he, pretty sophisticated little operation that he put together there for a guy who wasn't into the military stuff and wasn't really a gun guy. So anyway, film at 11, so more to follow. His girlfriend back in the United States, we'll find out, I guess, more. But still unbelievable event, and will impact certainly the city of Las Vegas and the way that they do business, where they hold concerts. When you go to a hotel, it would not surprise me now if your luggage is x-rayed. And because it's, people say, how could you get that many weapons into a hotel room? It's not hard, right? If they're all AR-15 types, then all you have to do is go ahead and you know, break them down, and they would fit in just about any medium-sized suitcase that you have in your inventory, right? Two pieces of an M16. There you go. How do you get the ammunition in there? You put it in a suitcase with wheels, and you take it up there. And you're there for the course of 3 days. You can continue to bring it in. And again, ammunition, you know, that's, you know, thousands of rounds there's, you know, there, you can, and they would have been in magazines. He would already put them in magazines. At least that's my opinion. So anyway. Sad stories as we learn about the survivors that and some of the tales that they will tell. So, good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Gunner's going to make a special appearance, a cameo appearance here for a few minutes in about 3 minutes. So, good morning. Motivation.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
He does. Mostly his own people. Joining me is one of his own people. That's not a joke either. Everybody's ever heard that and sends me an email. Hey, that shit was funny. I laughed out loud at work. Mike Musselman, explain the bump stock. Can I give a layman's interpretation of how the bolt works? The bolt is smooth on the bottom with a notch. A rifle that fires in semi-automatic fashion has a thing called the sear. When the round is discharged, the bolt moves to the rear. It travels over the sear, hits a buffer, which is a spring with a device at the end, right? As it comes forward, the sear catches it. Okay?
Right.
All right, and so that's, and you got to pull the trigger again, and then the weapon shoots. Okay, so that's how a sear works. So, Mike, explain the difference between a sear being filed and turning that thing into an automatic weapon and this bump stock thing.
Well, with the bump stock, how it works is it's all one piece from the pistol grip to the stock, and then you you install it. And how it works is it relies on the recoil of the weapon to reset that sear immediately. So when you shoot that first round, basically what's happening is your upper and lower receiver is kind of moving independently of the stock system, allowing the sear to be reset almost immediately. And then you're just holding the trigger down. So when it resets, it's just being released again and again and again and again. And it's a repetitive, as long as they can, you know, the recoil of the gun is being indecent or being used against itself, basically, to cause the disruption of the sear. So.
Okay. Now, acoustically, in terms of rate of fire, is it the same as filing a sear down? And so you can imagine, if you take a metal file and you file that sear down, or if you take a wheel and file that sear down, or buy a kit to do it, any one of those, there's nothing inhibiting the bolt from continuing just to travel back and forth. What I heard was no retardation of the bolt acoustically in those audio tapes from the other night. Acoustically, is there a difference? Rate of fire, is there a difference between the? There is. Audibly, you'd notice it.
Yeah, on the bump stock, what you're going to hear is you're going to hear slight disruption. It's not going to be an even sound of the report. So, like a fully automatic gun, when you pull the trigger, it's going to be even. You're going to hear the bang, bam, 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 and there's going to be equally spaced, you know, the whole nine yards.
Right.
For the bump stock, you're going to get some disruption in between there. So you can hear the bang, 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 bang. And it's going to be kind of not as uniform.
Okay.
And that's it. So when they were talking about bump stocks last night, I went on the internet, of course, again, and then pulled up the audio for a bump stock shoot, and then recorded that on the Soundwave program. And there is. You can distinctively see, you can measure it, how disruptive the pattern really is, and it's not as uniform as a true automatic weapon.
Okay, so the audio.
No, I'm not saying he didn't have. I'm not saying that he didn't have a bump.
Right.
Things. So.
But the audio. I mean, I'm sure the audio that you heard the other night, and that you did your little spectral analysis on, your professional conclusion is
that was a fully automatic weapon.
Got it. All right, you're going to go speak where?
Huh?
You're going to go speak where today?
Oh, going to the high school, talk to a bunch of seniors. They have a project coming up on Veterans Day. So every year they do a big thing here in Granbury. So they want to have someone come in and talk to them about commitment and sacrifice and what it means and what your Veterans Day really kind of means, that kind of thing.
Wow. So. You fired up?
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. Well, good luck. Don't screw it up.
Yeah, I won't. All right, bye.
All right, man. Later. There you have it, Mike Musselman. What a bump stock is, and what he believes that he heard the other night. Yeah, you know, to me, I did not hear acoustically anything that I would say, well, why is the weapon functioning like that? What I heard was a fully automatic weapon. You know, it sounded like a 5.56 weapon that was turned into a fully automatic weapon. So anyway, I wanted to have him on and do a little explaining before we got going into the program this morning, since it is Wednesday and he tends to he does other things on Wednesday. So the we'll check the weather on the Marine Corps real quick and then continue with the program. Take a break. Tech News Headlines, John Ubaldi is going to join us. We'll talk to him and see what he has going on. Currently, mostly cloudy. Oop, hold on. It's got to reset itself and update the temperatures. Email. Mac, are you a Yankee fan? I am a Yankee fan. I'll explain that. I know what people could say. Your dad managed the Red Sox. I hate the Red Sox. I hate Boston. I hate all of it. Yeah. It's why Kelly told me when he came to get me to be staff sec in Ramadi. It's why he said, he's from Boston, Mac, you'll love him. Because he knows I hate all things Boston. Okay. currently sunny and 65 in Quantico. Camp Lejeune, cloudy and 68, Granbury, Texas, where the Gunner's going to go talk to a high school class. It is cloudy and 77. Big Timber, Montana. Partly sunny and 27 degrees. Good God, man. It's a little early for that, isn't it? Into the 20s. Hope that fat Jack Russell that Montana man has was inside last night. Sunny and 53 in 29 Palms. Wow. Sunny and 50 at Camp Pendleton. Double wow. Okinawa, dark, cloudy, and 81 degrees. In Rocca, it's getting cold. In the land of the crescent, sunny and 81 in Rocca. Margin remains the same. Clear, dark, 87 at the home of All Marine Radio. A little bit closer to the coast. The temperature they give at Camp Pendleton is from, if you know anything about the coast, at Pendleton you go over some mountains or through some mountains to get to the airfield. Yeah, that's where that comes from. Airfield, main side area. So, a little bit inland is fit. And so it's normally colder. Near the coast, normally a little bit more overcast, a little bit warmer. So, Costa Mesa, Newport Beach, 58 degrees, fair skies right now, looking for high of 76 degrees here on a Wednesday. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. John Ubaldi's going to join us. We'll check some news headlines. More of All Marine Radio on Hump Day coming up next. The National League wildcard game is tonight. One and done. Yankees beat the Twins last night. And since I'm a Yankee fan, I'll explain it. I was a Yankee fan when I was a little kid. There was the Giants were in Oakland. The Giants were in San Francisco. But for whatever reason, I was not a big – the Giants, I didn't listen to them on the radio. Yeah, Willie Mays played for them. I mean, one would have thought, but no. I what was real in my life was, as a little kid, was the game of the week. There was one game on Saturday, and that tended to be the Yankees with Mickey Mantle. I read books about Mickey Mantle. We had the same initials, blah, 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 blah. So my dad is involved in Major League Baseball, and I root for his teams. When he's done, I don't have a team. And I didn't particularly care for Major League Baseball anyway because I thought they were all scumbags. That's right, all scumbags. So, 1996, and Derek Jeter makes that play in Oakland where he flips that ball along the first baseline to Jorge Posada. They take Jason Giambi out. I thought, who am I kidding, man? I'm a Yankee fan. It's what I am. It's who I am. So, anywho, that's why I'm a Yankee fan. But, you know, what I really love is baseball has its own drama. It's different from other sports, you know. And baseball, there's a meter, and it's each pitch. And there's a drama when it gets intense where you sit there, and then the pitch, and then the ball gets hit. And last night, you know, there's something special about Yankee Stadium, the history, the craziness of New Yorkers. But anyway, that place was crazy, and it was, if you're a Twins fan, obviously, not fond of the outcome, but the Twins in the top of the first inning go up 3-0, and the Yankees, come back in the bottom of the inning, their shortstop hits a 3-run home run, and the place is going crazy, and then the Yankee bullpen pitches 8 2/3 innings of the game. Yeah, come on, and they won. So, anyway, me, Jack, and Joe hung out and watched the game last night. Heated up a little bit of steak that was left over. Good night. Anyway, the National League game between the Diamondbacks and the Rockies, two Western Division teams, I think, which is pretty amazing. Three teams from one division getting in the playoffs. And the wild card of baseball has been a great addition. More teams stay in it longer, more fans maintain interest. So, anyway. And nobody kneeled down for the national anthem. How about that? I love that. Hey, and again, I'd be more than happy to help any of them, to work on any of them. Regional police academies where they could go train, fund it nationally, you know. Get out there and lead, man. But taking a kneel and all that and being disrespectful of the flag, regardless of your First Amendment rights, when you have better courses of action, is bullshit. And so, again, I don't watch the NFL anymore. I would encourage you not to watch the NFL anymore. They have a right to do it. We have a right to vote with our wallets. And so when advertisers like Hertz, like Budweiser, like Sprint, when they all start seeing numbers go down and they pick up the phone and tell the NFL, yo, not what we paid for, bro, right? Express your views on your own time. You're working for us those days, remember? We're the ones that are paying the freight. That big TV contract? Yeah, that's us. So get your shit together. So, again, I would encourage you not to watch the NFL, right? Not to watch the NFL. And if you need a reason not to watch the NFL, well, I won't go there right now. I'm trying to be happy today. Today, happy day. So, good morning. John Ubaldi going to join us next. Don't touch that dial.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out.
Military community. Military by owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
On a Wednesday. Joining us from Tampa, Florida is retired Marine Corps Master Gunnery Sergeant John Ubaldi. Master Guns, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. First of all, you your thoughts on current events, Las Vegas. We'll start there, and then I was curious if you saw any of the Senate Armed Service Committee testimony yesterday, and I was surprised at how upbeat General Dunford and Secretary Mattis were relative to the future of Afghanistan. It was encouraging, and so I want to get your thoughts on that. But generally, your thoughts on Las Vegas.
Well, Las Vegas was a shock. I mean, I was at the gym on Monday, and I saw 20 people. I was killed. And when I came from swimming at the pool, I turned the news on, and over 50 were killed. It was just horrific tragedy. And I think the hardest part to understand is the guy was a 64-year-old man. He didn't fit the profile of most mass shooters. He wasn't on, as far as we know, he wasn't, had mental illness. He didn't, wasn't on antipsychotic medication. He just didn't fit the profile. So I think it'll be interesting to see once they know they're in speaking with her now or interviewing her now, the girlfriend of him. So we'll have to see where it goes, but it's just a horrific event.
Yeah. Yeah. I just had Mike Musselman come on and talk to, because when, I don't know if you listen to much of the audio, but when you hear the audio, there's no mistake what weapon it is. For those of us who have heard that weapon, it is an AR-15 like, M249 like 5.56 weapon that's fully automatic. And, you hear it and you listen to it. And what's odd about it is that even, you know, you teach machine gunners three to five round bursts, right? When you hear that thing go on for 10 seconds, you're just like, oh my God. Oh my God. And so, go ahead.
One thing I want to know is why was he targeting that particular group? I mean, he clearly had this planned. I mean, you had the fields of fire, the way he maneuvered around, the way he put platforms in the room. He clearly wanted to do destruction. But I just want to know, why did he choose that group, and what was the reason for that group?
Yeah, I guess we'll find out. The other thing that's pretty is that he just didn't go there with a couple. He just didn't go there with a couple weapons, and you know, and a sledgehammer. I mean, when you look at it, there are reports that he videotaped himself in there doing the shooting. There are also reports that he had a camera. He had put a camera in a room service cart so he could see down the hallway. There was a second camera in the peephole of the door. So he had one and then a backup camera to see down the hallway. So the level of sophistication of what he did is not what one would expect from a novice. So, we heard his brother, saw his brother on TV, and he said, yeah, he's just a normal guy. He likes to gamble, lives in Nevada. He likes burritos, all that kind of nonsense. He's not a crazy, he's not a military background. He's not a crazy gun guy. Yeah. How well do you know your brother?
What you just described in the situation that you just laid forth, when I first heard this, I go, he must have been law enforcement, prior military of some sort. But when they found that he wasn't military, there had to have been some training with somebody. Because what you're describing, this isn't a novice.
Yeah. No, without doubt. Those ranges exist around Las Vegas, and it's part of the, if you want to go and shoot, and you want to go shoot a machine gun, there's businesses that offer that kind of, that kind of experience in a very controlled setting. And so you can.
I went to one no more than 50 miles outside of Las Vegas called Frontside. And I'm not saying Frontside was any way responsible for this, but that was one of the better training facilities I went to. I went through a 4-day pistol course. Once you get to become a distinguished shooter, then you go to the advanced pistol shooter. They have rifle courses where you can shoot your semi-automatic weapons like you use. So it would be interesting, did he get any kind of training unbeknownst to these shooting facilities outside of Las Vegas? That will be, the investigators are going to have to find that one out. Because he clearly had some type of training. I mean,
this is not novice stuff.
No, this is not novice stuff. And it was just amazing that he was there from Thursday through Sunday. He brought up 10 bags and carrying weapons, all those weapons, and then all the ammo. Ammo was not light. So he must have gone back and forth.
Right. Right. No, I mean, so but people say, how could he have got that much? If let's just say the majority of the weapons that he used were AR-15 type weapons, right? It's a matter of two pins that break that into about a 16-inch section and another 24-inch section, 26-inch section.
Right.
And both of those fit easily diagonally in just about any medium-sized suitcase that you care to take anywhere. Right?
And then the question becomes is, where did he buy these weapons? Because I know there was one report he bought them in Nevada, Arizona, and he bought some in California. I'm curious to which ones he bought in California, because to drop the magazine, you can't do it by your thumb. You have to use a device. So if you're firing kind of rapidly like he was, my guess is he didn't buy the semi-automatic rifles in California.
Right. And to me, I found it curious that maybe there's a reason to use multiple weapons in terms of the barrels heating up if you're going to shoot like that. But to me, it would be much easier to switch magazines than to go put one weapon down, pick up another one, put it, wherever you're shooting from, blah, 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 blah. So if you search for 100 round magazines, 5.56, you'll see you can buy the traditional, kind of side-by-side magazine that we're used to, and it's just extended. It looks like one of those big Kalashnikov magazines without the curve in it. It's just straight. And then you can also buy a drum magazine, two drums which essentially feed into a magazine, which is a little bit more compact. But Mike Musselman, who we had on, said, you know what, those drum magazines, most of the times they jam, they suck. But again, in any case, I think the point is this guy had no small amount of training. He looked like he had considerable training, and he also had given enough thought relative to the other things like the cameras that would support this event so that he could prolong it as long as he could. So and just very disturbing. And I agree with you, John, that you know, this guy, like, so what was his deal? He not a big social media guy. Doesn't look like he left some kind of grand statement. Was he just pissed? Was he just pissed and was going to do harm to Vegas because he has huge gambling debts? To me, that's the one thing that makes
sense. You just don't know.
Yeah.
But I still would like to know, even just in the hotel room where he was at, you notice he had two windows, both optimum for field of fire that cross over. So he hits one angle, then he goes to another window and gets them from another angle. So he dialed these people in. So it still goes back to, did he get training from somebody? Was he a survivalist? But it didn't sound like he was any part of it. He was an accountant.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that's disturbing. This is what the investigators are going to have to investigate is, how did he get this sophistication of setup? This is not a novice by any stretch. But
John, you know, look, he even had ammonia nitrate with him, right? All this stuff is available on the internet, and so
and they tell you how to do it.
Right. Which
I looked up ammonia nitrate. They give you a basic way of how to make it into an explosive.
Yeah, and that's what Tim McVeigh did. In Oklahoma City.
And they've done it. I think they've done it in the Middle East, and some. I think they've done it in Europe as well. I mean, it's relatively available, so it's going to be a long process to figure this out, and that's why the girlfriend is going to be key to all of it.
Yeah. Let me read you an email.
And one of the.
Let me read you an email
from
Montana man here. I wasn't familiar with bump stocks before this event. On some of the later strings of fire in Las Vegas, I could tell there was something different as the rate of fire was audibly inconsistent, which is what Mike was talking about a little bit earlier when he came on. He said acoustically, he told me, he said, the audio that you played the other day, that's full automatic. It is consistent. It is the same. And he said, and then Mike said, what a bump stock will do, you'll hear inconsistencies in the firing. And he said, and that's the mechanism of the bump stock. The email goes on. I figured it was one of those trigger cranks. As a hardcore NRA guy and shooting enthusiast, I cannot fathom why anyone would want a bump stock other than to play machine gun. Unfortunately, he chose the perfect venue for employment of one. I would have no issue with legislation banning them. Speaking of machine guns, the semi-annual machine gun shoot at Knob Creek, Kentucky goes down in 10 days. Collectors from around the country show up to show off their toys, and many of them set up a gun for attendees to shoot for a fee. It's quite a sight to see World War II guns as well as modern guns on the line. I took my son there in 2014. He got to shoot 40 rounds through a PKM as well as a full magazine from an AK-47. Yes, I coached him on short burst. The you know what? Having lived up in North Dakota, where, you know, you're born with a shotgun and a rifle in your hands as well as a fishing rod. I mean, when the biggest political issues in a state are land posting and hunting issues, right, that tells you a lot about the state that you live in, okay? And it's serious, serious stuff for those guys. But they don't go out and buy guns on whims. Buying weapons is serious stuff. They research it, so guns on demand, and responsible gun ownership in terms of legislation. I don't see too many people, looking at that and some of the things that exist, the loopholes that exist in gun shows. You know, most of the people I know say close all that stuff. We're the law-abiding gun owners. Who needs that stuff? Nobody needs that stuff. And so, anyway, there's one more.
No,
It has been reported that he was in town for the Life is Beautiful Music Festival a few weeks prior to, but didn't execute his plan for some reason that escapes me, possibly hotel room access. If that is true, I don't think he cared what kind of crowd there was. He just wanted a big one. This twisted fuck clearly intended to set a record. Yeah, that's why, again, I'm not a police officer. I just, you know, amateur sleuth work like everybody else here on the radio. But, no, to me, the intended target was Las Vegas, you know, which was...
No, there was Las Vegas.
Right. The intended target is not the people. The people were just, you know, they just got knocked over in delivering the message that he wanted to irreparably damage Las Vegas for whatever reason. He sees it as a corrupt town, whether he owed too much money or whatever. I guess we'll find out. But to me, that begins to make sense, that I'm going to irreparably damage this place and put a dent in it like nobody. And that the people there, why the country music concert? Because it was going on. No, there's no reason for it.
Well, but see that goes back to what's the person made that email. There was another venue, for whatever reason, he couldn't get into that hotel room. So, like any professional, he had a backup plan. This didn't work. We're going to go to this, and he knew that he'd probably scope what are the concerts are going to be into that area on these days, and he figured, okay, I missed one, I can get the next one. And this is what the Dominic would be interesting to have on your show and see if you can get like a retired investigator and get their insights and how they would investigate something of this magnitude.
Yeah. I don't like to do the conspiracy. I don't like to do the
conspiracy
conspiracy thing. I like to explain stuff to people. And so, another email. Have you and Mike seen this video with a taxi driver in Las Vegas? Why is the gun sound loud then muted? Just wondering. Thanks a million. I have not. No. So I will take a look at it. But again, you know, when these things happen, there are the crazies among us. I'll just give you an example. Like the Navy, you know, in their collisions, you know, one of the things that got going was that the Russians or the Chinese had hacked into our encrypted satellites and had like put them someplace they weren't, and that's why these ships keep crashing. No matter what data gets fed to the navigation, you have people on the bridge watching, okay? You have lookouts external to the ship that watch. So even if they teleported you through cyberspace to Dubuque, your lookouts would still say, there's a ship 3,000 meters off the port bow, and you would avoid it. So, but you hear these things get going as the internet brews its own special cocktail. So, there's so much audio. Why one guy's was muted, I don't know. Probably because something's wrong with his cell phone. Because you hear other video, and clearly it's nothing's muted. It's the natural sound of what happened that night.
And this is what investigators are looking at, everything, trying to get all videos, trying to get all cell phone data from everybody, so they can piece all this stuff together. It's going to be a long process.
Yeah, but I would think within a week after they get his computers and things like that, you'll know why he did it. I hope we don't have to wait 2 months to get some kind of explanation with all the I's dotted. I think, can we get an explanation of he was pissed because he had lost almost $2 million in that city. And because of that, he thought they were corrupt and, you know, and he has a history of mental health you know, blah, 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 whatever. Whatever the explanation is. I hope we get some kind of explanation within the next 2 weeks that at least allows most people to look at it and say, okay.
Well, I think we probably would, what you said. If they got us computers, they got us whatever cell phone, and then the key part of this is his girlfriend's now with the investigators now. So the FBI, all the big law enforcement agencies are, this is number one priority. So I'm sure the autopsy is going to go fairly quick to see if there's any kind of medical condition from in his brain or something, almost like the tower shooter in 1966. Right. So we'll start to get to, we'll start to piece this stuff together. Right. And let's see what she said.
The let me switch gears with you. The Secretary of Defense was on Capitol Hill yesterday, along with General Dunford. Both of them were wire brushed by John McCain because he doesn't feel like his committee is getting the information it needs to provide the oversight that it needs. And it sounds like he's legit, and both of them said they
were. No, that's a fair question. That's a fair question.
Did you have a chance to see it? Both of them painted a, I don't want to use the word rosy, both of them painted a confident, upbeat picture of where Afghanistan was going. Did you get a chance to see any of that?
I didn't get to see it. I read the reports thing about John McCain, Senator McCain. I think there was one other senator, was a Democrat, who had the same argument that John McCain had. And I know General Dunford and General Mattis put a different strategy than was the case with President Obama. And the president of Afghanistan, this is like a light and day type thing in Afghanistan. The point that I would like to know is, what is the government's part? Because we've all know that the way the Taliban has been successful is they get things done, whether as cruel as it may be, but they get things done in a very fast pace, where you have corruption at the government level up in Kabul that just doesn't get down to the province, and even if it does, it's also corrupt. So the only way they're going to be successful in Afghanistan, this is the same thing going on in Iraq and Syria, is the governance aspect of it all. And that's to be seen, or at least get more information on that aspect.
Well, one of the things that they were, that was kind of interesting that they were talking about, one is that the Americans, the United States, has officially articulated a conditions-based timeline.
Strategy.
Right.
Correct.
And so they said that was huge because one of the biggest things that they fought and that the government of Afghanistan fought was the notion and stated notion by the United States that we're leaving. And the Taliban then communicating, hey, they're leaving. Okay? You guys are going to be out of business. And so with the Americans essentially doubling down on, you know, they said, you know, that card is now no longer being able to be played. The other point both of them made was that the Taliban is not one organization. And,
no.
And one of the things that Dunford, I thought, did very well yesterday in the hearing was he articulated the strategy, which was this. Afghanistan is not now the nation that we went to in 2001, 2002. Afghanistan now has had guys, military soldiers and officers that have fought for close to 16 years. The older guys who fought the Russians are mostly out. You have young leadership, confident leadership, leadership that has grown up working with coalition partners, and according to General Dunford, he said they're good. He said they're better. And he said they, in conjunction with more American advisors that are primarily there to support strategy choices by local commanders and then support them with aviation assets and artillery assets, that combination, much like it has worked in Iraq and Syria, is what we're doing now. There is a far greater there's far greater protection for Americans that are doing that we're not, and we don't intend to assume a lead role in fighting this war. They're more than happy to fight it. What we believe that as all this comes together, and he talked about the Iraqi Air Force, he said, look, you know, they have limited offensive capability now, but that is expanding. We are transitioning them to the Black Hawk. We are, and then their aviation assets, their fixed-wing aviation assets, get better as every month go by. There's less and less collateral damage, and they become more and more formidable. He said, so as those things continue, buttressed by our advisors and our commitment, what we see is there is no way for the Taliban to conclude that they will militarily solve this issue. When that happens, he said, and it's well on the way to happening, there are elements of the Taliban that we believe are ready to come to the peace table right now. They will be stripped away from the greater Taliban, and then slowly but surely more people will come to that till we believe ultimately Afghanistan will get a negotiated solution, yada, 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 which was a pretty astounding, you know, little soliloquy given the state of Afghanistan, you know, 24 months ago. So I sat there and went, holy shit, man. That might actually mean that it all meant something, which I'm struggling with today.
But the point is that he said at the beginning is it's conditions based. When we went when they did the surge in 2009, right away, within the next breath, we talked about we're going to withdraw at a timeline. Well, the Afghan and Pakistan.
Hey, hold that thought. Rex Tillerson's making a statement. I don't know about what.
Has given voice to millions who felt completely abandoned by the political status quo and who felt their interests came second to those of other countries. President Trump's foreign policy goals break the mold of what people traditionally think is achievable on behalf of our country. We're finding new ways to govern that deliver new victories. Our job is now to achieve results on behalf of America, and we are doing that. We've created international unity around our peaceful pressure campaign against North Korea, including influencing China to exert unprecedented economic influence on North Korea. At the Riyadh summit, the president rallied Muslim majority nations to assume new responsibilities for stopping terrorism. NATO members are now contributing more to shared security. And our approach to South Asia and specifically Afghanistan means building upon our relationships with India and Pakistan to stamp out terrorism and support the Afghan government in providing security for their own people. And ISIS's fraudulent caliphate in Iraq and Syria is on the brink of being completely extinguished thanks to an aggressive new strategy led by the president. What we have accomplished, we have done as a team. Similarly, Secretary Mnuchin has levied economic sanctions on North Korea and related entities. Countries must increasingly decide whether they will do business with North Korea or with the community of peace-loving nations.
This is the Secretary of State making a statement. I don't know where this is going, but we'll hang with it. He doesn't do this very often.
Headed and achieved enormous success passing the toughest UN sanctions to date on North Korea. General Mattis and I communicate virtually every day, and we agree that there must be the highest level of coordination between our diplomatic efforts and our military efforts.
That in and of itself is absolutely amazing.
You can't
that
have a stronger partner than a Secretary of Defense who embraces diplomacy. And I hope he feels he has the partner he needs at the State Department. And this is just the beginning of the list of partners and friends across the government who are all working for the American people. There's much to be done, and we're just getting started. To address a few specifics that have been erroneously reported this morning, the Vice President has never had to persuade me to remain as Secretary of State because I have never considered leaving this post. I value the friendship and the counsel of the Vice President, and I admire his leadership within President Trump's administration to address the many important agendas of President Trump, both from a foreign policy perspective and a domestic objective. Let me tell you what I've learned about this president, whom I did not know before taking this office.
I'm not exactly sure what's pissed the Secretary of State off, but he's pissed, all right? And so he's coming on to clear the air. And go ahead, John, real quick.
I think what is getting him under the skin is in the media and on Capitol Hill, Rex Tillerson is not out in front. He's kind of behind the scenes, and they're not used to that. They think that he's being pushed around, and he's not. He's very effective. He knows foreign policy, and he knows the problems abroad. And he and Secretary of Defense Mattis work really well together. Trump has a very good foreign policy team.
All right, hold on, one of the better ones he's had
in decades.
Hold it right there, and I just paused this, so we'll continue with it. It's happening live. I just paused it so I could make a comment. 1 second.
He loves his country. He puts Americans and America first. He's smart. He demands results wherever he goes, and he holds those around him accountable for whether they've done the job he's asked them to do. Accountability is one of the bedrock values the president and I share. While I'm new to Washington, I have learned that there are some who try to sow dissension to advance their own agenda by tearing others apart in an effort to undermine President Trump's own agenda. I do not, and I will not operate that way. And the same applies to everyone on my team here at the State Department. When I wake up in the morning, my first thoughts are about the safety of our citizens at home and abroad. There's no more important responsibility I carry with me than ensuring that Americans are safe. Providing for the security of the United States must be the number one goal of our American foreign policy. President Trump and his administration will keep moving forward as one team with one mission, doing great things for the United States of America to make America great again. Thank you.
Is that the only thing that you consider to be erroneous in that article?
I think it's the most important element of the article is to reaffirm my commitment to this role that President Trump's asked me to serve and to dispel with this notion that I have ever considered leaving. I have answered that question repeatedly. For some reason, it continues to be misreported. There has never been a consideration in my mind to leave. I serve at the appointment of the president, and I'm here for as long as the president feels I can be useful to achieving his objectives.
Secretary,
What he's reacting to, and I have spidey sense, right? What he's reacting to, there's a story that cites NBC News, and NBC News says that they had three unnamed officials familiar with the incident reporting that Secretary of State Tillerson referred to the president as a moron at a July 20th Pentagon meeting. Tillerson is said to have been contemplating his resignation at that time. So this is in response to that. We'll let him finish and then we'll take it up.
Do you agree with Secretary Mattis that the United States should stay in the JCPOA?
We'll have a recommendation for the president. We're going to give him a couple of options of how to move forward to advance the important policy towards Iran. As you've heard us say many times, the JCPOA represents only a small part of the many issues that we need to deal with when it comes to the Iranian relationship. So it is an important part of that, but it is not the only part. And I've said many times we cannot let the Iranian relationship be defined solely by that nuclear agreement.
Can you address the main headline of this story that you called the president a moron? And if not, where do you think these reports or
I'm not going to deal with petty stuff like that. I mean, this is what I don't understand about Washington. Again, you know, I'm not from this place, but the places I come from, we don't deal with that kind of petty nonsense. And it is intended to do nothing but divide people. And I'm just not going to be part of this effort to divide this administration. I have not spoken to the president this morning. I think he's on his way to Las Vegas, is my understanding.
Secretary, do you have a partner in Islamabad? I think that the foreign minister. Do you have a reliable partner in Pakistan now after meeting the foreign minister of Pakistan earlier today?
Yes, I believe we do. You know, I think the Pakistan relationship, it's very, Pakistan relationship and U.S. relationship is extraordinarily important regionally. And as we rolled out the South Asia strategy, we spoke about it in a regional context. It is not just about Afghanistan. This is about the importance of Pakistan and Pakistan's long-term stability as well. We have concerns about the future of Pakistan's government, too, in terms of them. We want their government to be stable. We want it to be peaceful. And many of the same issues they're struggling with inside of Pakistan are our issues. So we think there is opportunity for us to strengthen that relationship. We're going to be working very hard at all levels, from the State Department to the Defense Department to our intelligence communities, as well as economic commerce opportunities as well. So it really is a regional approach, and Pakistan is critical, I think, to the long-term stability of the region. Thank you very much.
That is the Secretary of State. Let me read you the article that appears in Breitbart. Whenever you're looking for this kind of stuff, go ahead and dial up Breitbart because it'll have something in it. The sources seem to be curiously reticent about exactly why Tillerson said this. Much later in the article, NBC identifies them as, quote, three officials who were present or briefed on the incident, so it is not clear if any of them actually heard Tillerson's alleged outburst or knows what he was talking about when he dropped the insult. And evidently this was done at the Pentagon. And earlier in the piece, NBC says Tillerson made his fiery comments after the Pentagon meeting that included, quote, members of Trump's national security team and cabinet officials, so it is unclear exactly who he was talking to. NBC states it is also, quote, unclear whether Trump was told of Tillerson's outburst after the Pentagon meeting, and it is also, quote, unclear if Vice President Mike Pence was aware of the incident, which seems rather odd. Anyway, it's just, if you've ever been a part of any of those meetings, and I have been in Iraq when, Ambassador Bremer, you know, General Mattis, General Conway, General Sanchez, when those kind of people would come out after the whole Fallujah thing got going, right, the eyes of the world were on these kind of meetings. In those meetings, these guys are successful, prominent men. So let's just say, so Mattis, you want me to believe that in that meeting, Mattis hauls off and calls the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you know, an asshole or an ass clown in public? They don't do things like that. So I don't know if Tillerson's different. He was the head of Exxon, for God's sakes. He's negotiated with Putin. I'm sure that wasn't the first contentious meeting he's ever been in. And so to think that a guy like that would lose his composure and then say something sophomoric about the President of the United States, I don't know. I just find that a reach. And for them not to be able to name somebody, once again, for them not to be able to name somebody is – It's kind of greasy to me. I guess the proof is in the pudding.
Well, it is, but also it's coming from Breitbart. I know Steve Bannon is.
No. It's coming from NBC News. That's, I guess, who broke the story.
But these are some of the stories that have been coming out. They don't leave. The journalistic abilities here are very telling. They give these questionable sources, or my sources say this, and then we find out there was nobody who was ever even in the room, how it was said in the context, and they make it spin to generate some type of animosity because they just don't like President Trump. And I would tell people, even Bob Woodward said it. If you don't like the guy, that's fine, but do your job in a journalistic manner, and it doesn't seem to be getting done there. And going back to what Rex Tillerson started this thing is, This is a far cry from the 8 years that President Obama ran the foreign policy of the United States. He went to the UN in 2009 and said, America is going to step back. Let's let everybody else get a chance to lead. Well, Donald Trump said, we're not doing that. We're going to do what's in the best interest of the United States. And he said to other countries, do what's in your best interest. And you should look after your own country and your own people. But he's not going to have America slip off into the sunset. That's not going to happen under this watch. And Tillerson and Mattis and General Kelly and General McMaster, they all know the role the United States plays and the unique role that it plays. And that's what they're pushing forward.
Yeah, it's again. So it was odd. That's why we went to it, because all of a sudden the Secretary of State is going to make a statement. And again, what was telling though relative to the story was when asked for a comment. Whether he'd said the president was a moron, he didn't deny it. And in Washington speak, that's big stuff. Quote, I'm not going to deal with petty points like that. And then he talked about efforts to divide the administration. To me, if he said it, it's better to just say, yeah, I did call the president a moron. I was pissed. I want to apologize to him. He's not a moron. If anybody's a moron in this whole shit show, it's me for making a comment like that. Next question. And then move on. But I don't know that that's how you do it in Washington, D.C. And again, well, what it had to do with, if everybody remembers, evidently this meeting had to do with Afghanistan. And the president, General Dunford, in one of his testifying events, said that he thought that they would be ready to lay out the strategy that they believed would win in Afghanistan in late July. And then this was one of the meetings, July 20th, where evidently the president had taken issue with a whole series of things that they had proposed. So this is part of those discussions, and let me tell you, be honest, Donald Trump, can you imagine trying to get things done, and then the shit that comes out of his mouth?
Oh yeah, I mean General Kelly has got to be a saint to be dealing with this.
come on, you'd be sitting there and you're like, he said what, right? So, and then Mattis was asked very pointedly yesterday about, Secretary Tillerson's efforts in opening diplomatic doors and the president's comments, don't waste your time, Rex, blah, blah, blah. And then Mattis, Mattis is as sharp as a tack, right? He says, I don't see those as inconsistent. He said, we're not talking and negotiating with the North Koreans. And so if somebody has that that impression, that's wrong. What we're looking for is constantly trying to find ways to begin discussion, and I don't think the president's sentiment is inconsistent with that effort. And you're like, wow, well done. Well played, Maurer, well played.
But see, what they're also looking for is inconsistencies in the policies that President Trump said and his aides, like what Secretary Tillerson mentioned with the Iran nuclear deal, whether they're going to certify it or not, because General Mattis looks like he said, okay, we got to look at this. And Rex Tillerson mentioned, we're going to look at all aspects, not just the nuclear agreement, because all we did for the past 8 years was focus so singularly on that issue. We pushed everything out that Iran was doing in Syria, Iran, Yemen, throughout the Middle East. We weren't concerned. And I would walk dissent debating these issues until you come to a common agreement where we're going to go. I don't want someone who's just going to be a lapdog to the president. I want General Mattis, Rex Tillerson, and all his foreign policy gurus to give him straight scoop. Let's debate it out, then come to a final resolution. That's what leaders do.
Yeah, and what this points out a series of headbutting events that the president and Tillerson have had. And let me tell you, if Tillerson leaves the cabinet, I would say it's a huge blow to Donald Trump because Tillerson's so highly respected. Evidently, they clashed over Qatar. They clashed over Iran during this past summer. Also, evidently, the president, according to NBC, the president was furious or irritated with Tillerson when asked about the president's response to the event in Charlottesville. Tillerson, you know, and I remember the quote, said the president speaks for himself. And evidently the president was irritated. Evidently the president addressed some of these issues according to NBC, in a meeting the next day. He said that during the meeting, Trump congratulated other White House officials, Homeland Security, for their performance. National Security Advisor, Homeland Security Advisor, Bosar defended Trump's controversial pardon of Joe Arpaio, the sheriff. And then he told Tillerson that he was upset about his comments when he saw them the first time. Now, what blows me away about this is the kind of shit that went on before General Kelly got there. This is, since he's been there, this is the first time that you have people from that inner circle leaking back out to, this was like PK. This was P. Kelly White House intrigue nonsense. And so, so the article is entitled on NBC News, Tillerson's fury at Trump required an intervention from Pence. And one, two, three, four different writers have their name on the byline. Carol Lee, Kristen Welker, Stephanie Rule, and Defana Linzer all contribute to it. But they all detail the palace intrigue that goes with this. So it goes. And that's why Rex Tillerson was speaking today. So
he's probably just, I'm done with this stuff. Let's move on to something more important. I'm not going to get involved in these trivial matters. You guys want to play that? Go for it.
Yeah, but again, I would tell you that trying to stand out in front when the president is talking shit in the media and you're trying to build something behind it, it's like, come on, man, you're fucking killing me with this stuff. And so Tillerson's a professional guy. Mattis is a professional guy. If those guys decide, hey, I can't be a part of this anymore, that's a huge blow to the nation.
It's a huge, huge blow.
And so the question is the president smart enough to rein his own stupid mouth in so that these guys can do the work that they do? Because you can't continually, you know, undercut their efforts and expect them to hang around.
No.
They're not those guys. They're not career State Department. Tillerson, he made his money in oil, right? He's a world figure in that industry. He doesn't need this shit.
No, all of them don't need this stuff. They can go, I'm going to go somewhere else.
Interesting.
So what does that mean? We'll just have to see where this goes.
Interesting. Here's another email. Mac, could you imagine being a flying on the wall in Kelly's office when he closes the door and gets a bottle of scotch out and runs his hand over his bald head? What the hell did I do? Yeah, I can't imagine. No, I mean, you know, the president is a disaster as a leader. I mean, he says stuff he shouldn't say, and then you got to somehow. And then it seems like, to me anyway, he expects you to go out and defend it. Right?
The problem with Trump is he has to realize he's not a CEO in a business. You lead the United States, there's a certain decorum you have as president. He said the same thing about Puerto Rico. What the hell are you getting into a fight over a mayor down in Puerto Rico? What does that serve you? And it's just, you just want to say, can you keep it down to a dull roar? Give us something to work with?
Yeah, I don't know.
And that's another issue that really hasn't been reported. It's not the relief effort. It's the fiscal disaster that's Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico, if you look at the video and everything I've read and studied and came across, looks like a third world country. So they're already $80 billion in debt with only like less than 4 million people on that island, and people are leaving by the thousands. And down here in Florida, they're looking at bringing in another 500,000 people from Puerto Rico to the mainland USA, and Florida's going to get a good chunk of that. So the government down here has to figure out how we're going to pay for all this stuff. And that's what they have to realize, because they can't meet their bond obligations. They don't pay taxes off that. So the municipal bonds here that people have in the United States, you're investing in Puerto Rico, so you're going to be directly affected. So how do you deal with the fiscal mess? It portends what happens to some of the states, like Illinois, which is virtually insolvent, can't even meet its own payment obligation. So that's one thing that nobody's talking about.
Yeah.
And it needs to be addressed.
Yeah, pay for it? What do you mean pay for it?
Yeah, pay for it. Somebody's got to pay for it. You can't have the peasants pay for it, then somebody's got to.
Pay for it?
I mean, here's something. Almost all the municipalities, like the water, their energy companies, are all insolvent. You look at the roads, look at the housing, look at the buildings. It's a disaster. Now, the new governor, I think Rosallo, I can't pronounce his name. He's only been there since January. But he's only 37 years old.
You're talking about the guy in Puerto Rico.
The guy in Puerto Rico. And he's very young, 37. He's got a PhD, but it was more in the medical field. He had some economics as a bachelor's degree. But he's new. And you're talking, how do we cover $80 billion when you've got less than 4 million people and people are fleeing the island? So there's a lot of things that they need to fix. So if you're going to do an aid package, you have to encompass it. How does that work with the fiscal package? And I don't believe in giving it to the government of Puerto Rico. It's got to be on some kind of oversight, which they do now that was put through in the tail end of the Obama administration, that there's like an oversight part. But I'm not sure how that works with the Puerto Rican government.
Yeah. And then the president said yesterday, right, that Puerto Rico's debt's going to have to be wiped out. What does that mean? Does that mean defaulted on? Does that mean the United States steps in and assumes that debt?
That's a good question, because if Puerto Rico defaults, and we allow them to, and we assume that, what happens to the other, like the states? Like, I go back to Illinois, is virtually insolvent. What happens to those? Because we have, was it almost like $2 or $3 trillion of unfunded pension obligations that haven't been paid? Does the government bail out those pension funds? And these are mainly from public employees? How does that work?
Just to give you a little snippet, okay, Puerto Rico has been struggling with debt and a financial crisis for years, even before the hurricane, right? Their debt totaling $73 billion forced it to file in May for the biggest U.S. municipal bankruptcy in history. And this is the president yesterday. I don't know if it's Goldman Sachs, but whoever it is, you can wave goodbye to that, Trump said in an interview that aired late Tuesday night. The debt was massive on that island. So still the president. Yeah, you can wave goodbye to that. And then the question is, who owns that debt, right? Less than 25% of Puerto Rican debt is held by hedge funds, according to estimates made by Kate Long, a researcher of Puerto Rican debt, and she works for a clearinghouse. The rest is owned by individuals and mutual funds, which are held by mom-and-pop investors. So ultimately, the investors that invested in those kind of mutual funds will eat it, right? So she goes on, for the most part, Main Street America owns that debt. It's not as though these are vulnerable circling around, there are vultures circling around the island. So they're mutual fund holders, and they'll get that stuff will get written off, and they'll eat it. And Puerto Rican's been dealing with this, trying to find a way out of it. And the problem, and this goes to, John and I were having a conversation about the California Senate passed a universal health care measure. And then they went to do what's called scoring the legislation. And John, pick up the story from there. What happened?
Well, they scored it. The Legislative Analyst Office, which is a nonpartisan group, scored it, and it would cost $400 billion. Now, if the federal government coughs up $200 billion to cover Medicare and Medicaid, you're still down to $200 billion, and the California budget is only $189 billion. So the Speaker of the Assembly, who's liberal, he supports, in principle, single payer, but he's like, how are you funding this? How are you paying this? Because this goes off what Bernie Sanders proposed 2 weeks ago. He wants a Medicare for all across the United States. Well, the Urban Institute, which is a liberal progressive think tank, scored it at, it would cost $32 trillion, and Bernie Sanders would only raise $15 trillion through his tax increases. Oh. So where does the other $17 trillion come from?
That's now 17.
And this is over 10 years.
That's 17 billion, except it has a T on it, so it's trillion. Okay?
Trillion. And this is over 10 years. Trillion. You would bankrupt the country.
I know. Well, that's what happens to everybody. Everybody, here's what happens. You know, Bernie Sanders stands up there and, you know, he starts screaming and yelling. And I should be careful with this, but he reminds me, I'm not even going to say it because he's Jewish and the person I'm going to compare it to him is German. But he stands up there it wouldn't be prudent for me. But his face gets all red and he's bloviating and he's pissed. And then you say, okay, well, what you're talking about, most European countries don't have. And they are sensitive to the discussion of debt. So nobody has what you're talking about when we begin to score it and actually look at it. And everybody who's gone down that road that's looked at it says, oh no, hell no. And then the consumer that says, oh, you're not going to get what Bernie Sanders said. You're going to get this. The consumer says, I don't want that. That's worse than I have now. What happens though is the people at the bottom of the barrel, the unemployed, the indigent, whatever, they get taken care of. I get screwed again, and they say I'm not for that, and that's why it doesn't happen.
Well, that's why they tried it in his own state of Vermont. One governor came in and thought we're going to push this until he started seeing the bill come due. They tried it in Colorado, didn't work. But see, we look to Europe as a model. Even in England, Bernie Sanders looks at it how England does it. England has huge wait lists, and the only way to drive down costs in a single-payer system is you have to limit who gets care or not.
Got it.
I mean, I shudder to think if, like, when my dad, before he passed, he wouldn't be getting care. It was like, oh, he's 92.
Yeah,
his time has run out.
Yeah, we triage him. He's staying in the foyer.
Yeah, we will triage him.
Yeah.
There was no way. You have to limit the kid. And now some people, you know, British citizens are now starting to get their own private insurance. because they get better care and better quality care. And I would tell anybody, if you believe in single-payer system, go to the VA one time.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things that somebody said. Like, look, don't listen to Bernie Sanders. Do you want your health care done by the VA? That's what you're going to get, a version of that. Go talk to the veterans and see how they like it. Because they don't want, I mean, look, what veterans want is they want, I would say, they want a Medicare program. Give me a card. Let me go where I want. And you don't need to build hospitals all over the country for us. We'll just plug into the system and you pay for it. We don't need that. So, anyway, here's an email for you. Hey, Mac, I'm curious, did Master Guns watch all the Vietnam series? If so, his thoughts. We haven't really done a wrap-up of that because of current events. I'm curious. So, Master Guns, did you watch all of it? If so, what'd you think?
No, I would apologize. I saw the first day's version, or the first series when it came out. I watched excerpts. I just never got the time to watch all of that series. I wished I would have. I wish I could give the person who wrote the email better.
Wow.
I just did.
Wow.
My apologies. Wow. I throw myself on the stage.
Wow. Unbelievable. All right, what are you writing on this week?
Well, this week I just turned it in. My editor was on Puerto Rico. Some of the decisions that we need to make is how do we restructure Puerto Rico from its tax policies to its governmental structure? How do we get that done without setting a precedent for what could possibly happen to Illinois and some of the other states, New Jersey and Cecily, especially the cities? Chicago, Detroit are all kind of not doing all that well.
Got it. All right. And tell everybody where they can find your work.
They can go to two places. They can go to my Facebook page, just type in Ubaldi Reports, or they can go to the website and just go to UbaldiReports.com, and you can find them.
Got it. All right. I've got one more email. Mac, okay. One of the standing orders now in one of the divisions, and then parentheses, I won't say which one, is that during the weekday, if you have duty, you have to show up and stand duty during the workday. Could somebody make sense of that for me? Master Guns, can you make sense of that?
So when you have to show up for duty during the day?
During the day.
That's usually for us, we always did duty once everybody's off that morning. That's when that evening duty starts, all the way till the next morning, except on the weekends, then it's 24/7 or 24 hours. That doesn't make sense of duty during a work day.
I would agree with that. What are you doing during the work day if everybody's there?
Working.
I don't know what you're doing, right? Like, I get some of the things now, here's the things that piss me off about guys standing duty. Something happens on the parking lot, and you know, you're looking into it, and you say, where the fuck was the duty? Oh, he was in his hooch. Well, didn't anybody think to get his ass out here? And it's almost like, yeah, the duty is now in his hooch on his cell phone and he not paying attention. It's like, no, that's not what you do, man. Your job is to be a presence in the area.
And then it's eyes and the ears for the commander.
Yeah, that's you stand duty, right? And so I get the no cell phones, I think the TV off's a little much, but I get limit the distractions, do your job. Because in the Marine Corps, we have this, nobody wants, it's changed in that nobody wants to be a prick anymore. And if the Marine Corps is notorious for one thing, it's being a prick. And so.
Oh yeah, especially on.
Yeah, so now
especially
it's.
Especially like on Thursday.
But that doesn't go on anymore. You have units that don't field day anymore.
That threw me off. Field days every Thursday evening. You're up there field day until late at night.
And what did that allow? Why was that a good thing?
Because it brought self-discipline back in. It brought that you had to accountability, attention to detail, all those things, and it brought discipline. That's what the military is about. That's why I like the Marine Corps. It brought that discipline in.
Yeah, we don't do that. We don't do that anymore. And in a lot of places, their room is their private room. You don't have any business in there.
Yeah, that was a shock to me. I was like, what?
Remember? Tell me the first time you heard that and what went on in your head.
I was stunned. I'm like, you're kidding me, right? Well, yeah, they can't. You're kidding me, right? That was unheard of.
It is the most wrong-headed nonsense in the Marine Corps. And now I've had regimental commanders come on and say, yeah, that's not how it goes, at least not in my regiment. I own those buildings. But there was a move afoot, I think when General Amos was a commandant, that, you know, well, we don't go out and inspect, you know, their homes. And I said, well, we used to. It's called the health and comfort inspection. You know,
yeah.
Hey, I want to swing by your house. Now they have rights. And then it was, I remember getting told, I remember sitting in a meeting and hearing that for the first time. And I said, what are you talking about? Oh, and I want to say it came from the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps. And it was, no, you know, that's their home. We don't have any, you know, they should be able to set it up any way they want to. I mean, because we all know back in the day, there was every battalion, you know, had the way their rooms were set up. And on Thursday night, you field date, and the company gunner sergeant, he was in and out of that. That was his personal property. He was charged. And then when he got done, the following morning, the company commander would walk through early, and the battalion commander would walk through, and it would get inspected. And that shit was tight. Now,
the website, otherwise you won't go anywhere.
Now, not so much. Not so much. They got rights.
Oh.
They got rights. They can set their room up the way they want, you know, whatever posters they want, blah, 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 blah.
Well, on another note, I still remember when you came on board at MHG and we used to do the PFT and the CFT. And we had a story every Friday. We would go down to the gym and we would wait for anybody to show up and then we would do it. And the first comment you said was like, oh, what part of hell no are you not doing? They're showing up and this is their time. And if they don't show up, they're not getting
screw them. Yeah, no, this is what these guys were doing. They would go down like every Friday, and like whoever wanted to take a PFT could take a PFT. I'm like, what part of the Marine Corps is that? Publish the order. We'll have two dates that you could run it, and then we'll have a makeup date. And that's it. If you don't show up, that's your problem, not ours.
Exactly.
And people looked at me like, who's the new guy, man? I'm like, wait a minute, that's the Marine Corps.
But I liked when you implemented it. It was like a pain in the neck for me. Why can't we just have everybody show up at once?
That's how you do it. That's how we used to do it. But again, I would tell you this. There's responsibility that goes with that. There's structure that goes with that. And there's discipline that goes with that. And the further you get away from those things, the more you imperil your organization.
Well, especially when you go into combat. That's the goal of the military, is you fight and win wars in combat.
That's right. And let me tell you, you prepare for combat by executing things like the PFT. They go a certain way. You show up ahead of time, right? Master Guns goes down. We've got a couple staff sergeants. They're each in charge of shit. He sets them in motion, blah, 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 blah. He makes sure it's good. He calls me and says, sir, if you want to come down and take a look at it. So you go down there the first time and take a look at it. After that, you're like, obviously, he's competent. I don't need to supervise him except on exception when I have nothing else to do. But most of the time, I had more than enough to do. So he's got it.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, you earn that. Here's an email. Hey, Mac, this is the kind of guy Tillerson is. Tillerson was an Eagle Scout, and he's a former president of the Boy Scouts. Now, that guy's calling the president a moron in a group setting? I don't know about the Eagle Scouts that you know, but the Eagle Scouts I know, those guys are straight arrows, man. So I don't believe the NBC story. And it really bothers me that you have people inside the tank, if that's where this thing happened, that are leaking to reporters anywhere. I hope General Kelly finds these son of a bitches, all three of them, that supposedly leaked, although I have my doubts that there are three of them. I think that is smoke designed to protect whoever gave them this information. And I hope he gets to the bottom of it, and I hope he fires their ass.
But then on the other side, I'm
sympathetic to that.
No, but the other point is this, is we've seen it over the months, is there was what CNN did. They had three prominent reporters. One of them won the Nobel Prize back in 2006. They reported on something, one source. And it became, and when it fell away, the whole story went down. No reporter would have put something like that. And then you have the New York Times and the Associated Press back in June walked back that there were 17 intelligence agencies saying there was Russian hacking when it came down to four, and of the four, they handpicked. I knew the story was false back in January. Why did the New York Times and Associated Press wait 6 months before they disavowed that story? This goes back to why people don't trust the media. And I don't believe that NBC story. I can't imagine Rex Tillerson saying something like that.
Yeah.
I just don't.
Yeah, it's pretty... Let me ask you this. I started the show with this little comment, and I'll ask you about it. I have more and more people that come up to me and say, I've stopped doing social media. I've unloaded all the news apps from my phone because I can't take it anymore. Right? I can't take it anymore. Do you have people telling you that?
Yes, I do. I had to defriend a few people on Facebook because every post is like a tirade against whoever. And a lot of people are just getting sick and tired of the in your face of the news. And they're like, I'm done. I just can't do this anymore. And they just disavow themselves from Facebook or at least unfriend anybody that keeps pushing rants after rants after rants about whatever the topic is. And there's so much misinformation that gets put out on social media, but it's just disgusted by it.
Here's another one somebody said. Hey, Mac, have you seen this? And the headline is, Seahawks coach still hasn't apologized for accusing Las Vegas Police Department of horrendous incident of inequality. Talks about the Michael Bennett incident, which it's ironic. Yeah, that I don't know if you watched the press conference that I think it's Sheriff Lombardi from Las Vegas held on Friday, in which they detailed the incident that Michael Bennett was detained in. And I think if you watch it, you can see that the police had just cause to detain him. Right. And the police said there's no evidence that they had that said that he had a gun pointed at his head and said he was going to get his head blown off. The head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Right.
Yeah. Pete Carroll.
Pete Carroll in a statement said this. Michael Bennett unfortunately experienced a horrendous incident on August 27th. We are thankful he is safe. We take this opportunity to say that we stand in support of him and anyone facing inequalities. What happened with Michael is a classic illustration of the reality of inequality demonstrated daily. May this incident inspire all of us to respond with compassion when inequalities are brought to light and allow us to have the courage to stand for change. We can do better. So far, Carol has not apologized.
He won't
because, you know, what's he going to do? Be at odds with his player?
Well, it doesn't fit the narrative. And the one thing I think we spoke about this last week with these players and kneeling before the national anthem and all that stuff, almost all these players play in cities. They talk about inequality. Just this, when I led into it last week, they reported that minority children are far behind in test scores. 75% of black boys go to, can't read at grade level, but nobody protests that. They protest this. And almost all these players play in cities that have been controlled by one party for not just 5-10 years, for decades. The city of Seattle hadn't seen a Republican mayor since, I think, the 60s. Chicago goes back to 1931. This is not a Democrat or Republican issue. But these cities are controlled by one party, not just their mayor, but it permeates through all the phases of that city government. In Chicago, where's the protest with that school district is almost virtually insolvent. This affects minority children. Mayor de Blasio has been fighting to get rid of charter school, which improves the lives of minority children. No protest there. So I wish they really speak out about inequality and what's affecting their own communities, but really look at what's going on. But that's not going to be the narrative that's coming out.
No, it's not. It's not. All right, sir. First of all, always appreciate having you on. And tell everybody, John Ubaldi, my guest this morning, he from UbaldiReports.com, and you can find him on Facebook as well. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Mike. Take it easy. Have a great day out in California.
We will. We will. There you have it. Master Gunnery Sergeant John Ubaldi. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on Wednesday edition Hump Day right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
2018.